specific, unique issues you're dealing with. Or it may help fill the gaps left when medication is simply not sufficient to address all aspects of your ADHD, or at times of day when medications simply cannot be used. Numerous strategies and tools for dealing with any remaining symptoms and impairments in the various arenas in which you operate are at your disposal. Consulting a psychologist or coach is one way to tap into them. Another is to listen to the rest of this book. Steps 4 and 5 offer a raft of techniques for improving your daily life. All of them are based on my theory that ADHD is a disorder of self-control, a condition that leaves you without a good sense of time. All are based on the principle that ADHD isn't a matter of not knowing what to do, but of not doing what you know when you need to do it. Add these to medication, and you're well on your way to a better life. Instructions for Section 1. The ADHD Tracking Scale is designed to obtain your opinion on how often you demonstrate the following behavior. Consider the number that describes how often that behavior has occurred during the period indicated here. 0, rarely or never. 1, sometimes. 2, often. And 3, very often. Think about what time periods you are considering. During the past 6 months, since starting medication, since the medication dose was changed, or since stopping medication. Please indicate which one of these time periods you are considering when completing this. Then share this with your doctor to give him or her more complete information about your usual level of ADHD before starting medication or during the initial phase when you begin taking medication. During the past 6 months, baseline, since starting medication, since the medication dose was changed, since stopping medication. Symptoms. 1. Fail to give close attention to details or make careless mistakes in my work. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. 2. Fidget with my hands or feet, or squirm in seat when I am required to stay seated. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. 3. Difficulty sustaining attention to tasks or leisure activities. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. 4. Leave my seat in situations in which seating is expected. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. 5. Don't listen when spoken to directly. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 6. Restless. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 7. Don't follow through on instructions and fail to finish work. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 8. Have difficulty engaging in leisure activities or doing fun things quietly. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 9. Have difficulty organizing tasks and activities. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 10. Seem to feel as if I need to be on the go, or am driven by a motor. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 11. Avoid, dislike, or am reluctant to engage in work that requires sustained mental effort. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 12. Talk excessively. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 13. Lose things necessary for tasks or activities. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 14. Blurt out answers before questions have been completed. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 15. Easily distracted. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 16. Have difficulty awaiting my turn. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 17. Forgetful in daily activities. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Symptoms. 18. Interrupt or intrude on others. Never or rarely. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Instructions for Section 2. To what extent do these problems interfere with your ability to function in each of these areas of life activities? Activities. In my home life with immediate family. Never or rarely, 0. Sometimes, 1. Often, 2. Very often, 3. Activities. In social relations with others. Never or rarely, 0. Sometimes, 1. Often, 2. Very often, 3. Activities. In my activities in the community. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In school or other learning environments, if involved in an educational setting. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In sports, clubs, or other organizations. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In driving. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In leisure or recreational activities. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In managing my money and finances. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In my dating or marital relationships. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In raising children. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Activities. In my handling of daily chores or other responsibilities. Never or rarely. 0. Sometimes. 1. Often. 2. Very often. 3. Step 4. Change your life. Everyday rules for success. ADHD can make you feel like you're on a treadmill. Your symptoms make it much harder for you than for others to meet the demands of adult life. Some tasks don't get done by the deadline. Others elude you day after day, no matter how hard you try. You can end up exhausted at the end of the day, and still feel like you haven't gotten anywhere. Fortunately, the medication that normalizes many people's symptoms can level a playing field. In fact, as I've said before, many of the adults with ADHD I've known declare that effective medication has completely turned their life around. If you feel that way after you've worked with your doctor to find the right medication for you, you might be tempted to stop listening to this book right now. Feel free to do so. Stop listening to the book and get on with the rest of your life. Just keep the book where you can listen to it easily. I hope you'll come back to it soon, because taking step 4 can give you a valuable edge. The principles you learn in step 4 augment your treatment, kind of the way diet and exercise augment insulin for diabetes. Even with effective medication, you may experience some residual symptoms. The rules that follow can do the cleanup. The 8 rules for everyday success provide you with backup for particularly hard times. A major life crisis, physical illness, or any other stressful event might temporarily change the efficacy of your medication. Having an emergency toolkit at hand can keep you on a successful path at those times. If for any reason your medication becomes less effective, the rules in step 4 can fill in while you and your doctor figure out a new medication regimen. Again, it's always wise to have a plan B. The rules help you break old ingrained habits instilled by ADHD symptoms. Even with medication helping you override the deficits of ADHD, old habits can cling. These rules remind you that there's a different way to conduct your daily affairs, so you can get on with living a good life without delay. Remember in Chapter 11 I said there's a lot you can do to shape your environment to suit your needs? Step 4 is all about learning certain underlying principles that will help you do that in your daily life. Change the situation well enough, and you reduce how handicapped or disabled you will be within it. Each of the 8 rules for success is based on the symptoms of ADHD and their roots in the brain. Follow them, and you're directly counteracting the tendencies created by your ADHD brain that you heard about in Step 2. Throughout Step 4, I'll help you connect the dots between the greatest difficulties that ADHD causes you, which you identified in Step 2, and the rules that will be most important for you to learn and follow. Use these rules whenever you want to succeed, when you need to get things done, when it's important not to make mistakes, when you need to be on time, when you want to keep learning from the past so you can prepare for the future, when you want to reach your goals so you can end your day knowing you may be tired, but at least you have something to show for it. 16. Rule 1. Stop the action. What Rule 1 can do for you? Buy you some time before you respond. If you have adult ADHD, Rule 1 is for you. It's as simple as that. The problems with self-control that are at the heart of ADHD begin with difficulty resisting impulses. Your boss proposes doubling your sales goals for the year, and before you can bite your tongue, you bark out a laugh and say, "Are you crazy?" At the first sight of your neighbor's new lawn ornament, you tell him it makes his house look like a cheap motel. And now he's not speaking to you. Again. You see a gorgeous pair of designer shoes in a store window, and rush in to buy them, even though every penny of the paycheck you have in your purse is already spoken for. By not stopping before you act, you allow no time for thinking. That thinking includes using your hindsight and foresight to get a feel for the situation, recall what has happened before, and consider what you should do next. It also includes giving yourself time to talk the situation over with yourself, using your mind's voice to consider how to deal with the situation. Fortunately, you are not entirely without mental brake linings. But even with the full benefit of any medication you're taking, learning to stop reacting quickly to events around you with impulsive decisions, comments, and actions is going to take practice. Remember, the executive functions give you the capacity to exercise self-control. Making a conscious effort to use that capacity is up to you. Start by getting a handle on where you are most likely to behave impulsively, and where it can be most damaging for you. There are times and places where it's okay to be impulsive, talkative, spontaneous, or capricious, or where it's at least unlikely to cost you much of anything. But there are times and places you already know of where behaving this way can cost you dearly. Figure out where impulsivity hurts you most. Don't just guess at the answer. If you need to, compile a list of these costly situations from your past experience. Ask your spouse, your partner, a good friend, or a sibling to help you pinpoint your trouble spots. Where is impulsivity a big problem for you? At work? Where and when? While dating? What typically happens? In conversation? With whom? A friend, partner, spouse, or other loved one? When you shop with a credit card? What stores or websites and items do you find irresistible? When you get behind the wheel of your car? Always or only on certain routes or at certain times? Other? Strategy. Perform a simple action to stave off the urge to act. Before you enter one of the situations you just identified, the next time the occasion arises, I want you to practice buying yourself a few seconds to give your thinking a chance to kick in by performing any of the following simple actions. Inhale slowly. Exhale slowly. Put on a thoughtful expression and say to yourself, "Well, let me think about that." Just say, "Let me see now," pensively after inhaling and exhaling. Put your hand over your mouth for a few seconds. Almost any small action will do. In Chapter 9, I mentioned an adult who mentally locks his mouth with an invisible key to prevent himself from speaking. Once you've ingrained the habit of using public, outward actions to buy yourself time, you can shift to using mental gestures like that. For now, try a more public version of the locking trick. Put your hand behind your back or in a pocket and perform a key locking motion. To buy even a few more seconds, paraphrase what the other person just said to you. "Oh, so you want to know about..." "You're asking me to..." "What you need done is..." "You feel that..." Again, these are just examples. Pick a phrase that's easy for you to remember, that will roll off your tongue easily, so you're likely to use it. The key is not to see or do anything else in those first few seconds. Notice I did not say don't do anything. You've undoubtedly been told to stop and think many times before. But no one ever tells you how you're supposed to curb an incredibly strong urge to act or speak and just stand there and do nothing when every molecule in your body is urging you to do something. The reason this little ploy works is that it does give you something to do while you're buying the time to think, that ADHD usually denies you. practice. Try to practice doing this often, every day, lots of times a day, even when you're alone. This behavior comes naturally to those without ADHD, because the motor system of their brain is not as quick to fire off as your brain is. It may be unconscious for them, but it has to be very, very conscious for you, at least at first. The more you practice, the sooner it will become an unconscious habit. It will be hard, but believe me, it's worth it. You are going to try doing this so often that people may look at you funny. Why does this guy always have his hand over his mouth? Why does this woman constantly repeat back to me what I've just said? Try not to worry about it. It's better than getting an angry, shocked, or disgusted reaction. If you're having trouble developing a thick skin about others' responses to you, check out Rule 8. Strategy. Pick a slow-talking model and play that role when you converse. You gotta stop playing Tigger and become Winnie the Pooh. Quit being a Robin Williams in some rapid-fire stand-up comedy act, and start being more thoughtful like Ben Stein or Will Rogers. Slow it down. Think of yourself as a southerner instead of a northerner. Even just taking a little extra time to utter a sentence will give that theater in your mind time to load up the DVD of your past experience and get the camera playing on your mental screen. Practice speaking slowly in the mirror. See yourself as your slow-talking role model. Speaking more slowly will give your frontal lobes a chance to get some traction, to get engaged, instead of being swept along in the incessant tide of your impulses. Following Rule 1 helps you buy time to let your private mental home theater gear up and show you some video of your past experiences that may pertain to the present situation. Having bought that time, you must now consciously try to think about the situation. Thinking here means visualizing your past relevant experiences to find out what they have to tell you. The next rule will help you do this. 17. Rule 2. See the past and then the future. What Rule 2 can do for you? Help you see what's coming next. When a problem arises during your day, are you often completely thrown about what's likely to happen and what to do? Do you constantly beat yourself up for making the same mistakes again and again? Rule 2 is for you. You already know that your mind's eye, nonverbal working memory, is not as powerful as those of people without ADHD. This makes it really challenging to activate your mental imagery related to hindsight and foresight before taking action. You may very well already look back at your life and even look ahead for what your experience can tell you is going to happen, but only after you've already acted and the dust has settled. The good news here is that being able to exercise hindsight at all tells you that you do possess the capacity. The bad news is that exercising hindsight only after the fact usually leads directly to beating yourself up for having done or said the wrong thing. On top of the criticism of others, self-blame can beat you right into the ground, and you might find it harder and harder to get back up. As to foresight, being able to extract from past experience what's likely to happen in the future is great, as long as you can do it on the spot in the situations where you need that forecast. A decision you made last week to do something differently is likely to evaporate before you have a chance to follow through. You need a way to make sure that what you learned from the past stays accessible when you need it. Identify where you have weaknesses in nonverbal working memory. Figure out where you have the most trouble looking ahead. Those are the places where you want to practice seeing the past most. Do you hit every problem with a hammer because they all look like nails to you? Adults with ADHD haven't compiled a large store of remembered past experiences. So the subtle differences among problems and the need for different tools to solve them often elude them. Does learning anything new require that you go through a long, slow trial and error process? If you can't call up mental images easily, you have to keep trying one thing after another. Do you have trouble saving money, sticking to a diet, or perfecting an athletic skill? Deferring gratification is tough when you can't keep calling out the mental image of the prize that lies ahead. Strategy. Use an imaginary visual device to turn on your mind's eye. Learning to stop the action gives you that mental space to turn on the mind's eye. But your mind's eye is so fragile that the next irrelevant thing that happens around you can fracture what you were trying to think about. Suddenly, you are off on whatever tangent that distraction suggested to you. So what you need to do is mentally call up some visual device that you usually find engrossing. Your big flat-screen TV? Your favorite video or computer game? A minicam? Right after you stop the action, click on this device. You can even use a surreptitious physical motion to turn it on right when you are saying, hmm, or right after you've used the same hand to make a locking motion. Now, try to focus your mind and literally see for yourself, on the screen of that device, whatever light your past may shed on this particular situation. Visualize what happened the last time you were in a situation like this. Get creative. See the past unfolding in all its colorful, detailed action, as if you're filming it or replaying it right in the space you're in. Practice. The more often you do this, the more habitual and automatic it will become, and the more different videos will pop into your mind from your memory bank to guide your future. You'll be able to think, wow, the last time I interrupted a meeting with a joke, everyone laughed at me, not the punchline. Or, I felt really guilty when I got home with these shoes and discovered my son needed some expensive books for school, and I didn't have the money. Don't just practice projecting the mind's eye onto a TV or computer monitor in your highest risk situations. To cement the habit, do it where it's easiest too, where the stakes are lower, there's no pressure, and it's easier for you to stop the action and give yourself the opportunity. Strategy. Use tangible visual aids to give your mind's eye extra help. More on this in Rule 4. But let's say there's a particular setting where your mind's eye is blind, and you're tired of beating yourself up for not seeing what you should have done. Shoot a photo, clip one out of a magazine, or draw a picture of something that represents the don't. Do the same for one that represents the do. Put them up where you can see them often, reinforcing those mental circuits that connect what you want with what you've done in the past that has put it out of your reach. The woman whose downfall was expensive shoes posted inside her closet door a designer shoe ad coupled with a photocopy of her bank statement showing a zero balance. Opposite that, she posted a picture of her son and a photo she clipped from a magazine of a high school diploma. Seeing it every day helped the same images pop into her head when she passed by her favorite shoe store. Your mind's eye, nonverbal working memory, may be weaker and less effective than it is in others. But you also have a mind's voice, and that can serve to enhance what you are trying to visualize in your mind. Continue to listen to learn about Rule 3. 18. Rule 3. See the past, and then the future. Do you see what's coming and still go with the knee-jerk response? Do you feel like you keep having to learn the same lessons over and over? Rule 3 is for you. Nonverbal working memory, the mind's eye, isn't enough for most of us if we want to operate successfully in the adult world. Not only do we need to see what happened the last time we took a certain course of action, we also need to be able to analyze each situation before us and weigh the pros and cons of different responses. Let's say you know that blurting out your opinion in the middle of the last meeting was a mistake. When your boss presents a new plan that you think is misguided at this week's meeting, do you just clam up? Write your thoughts in a memo to him later. Recruit some allies and tell him about your misgivings together. Come up with an alternative plan. We need to be able to distill rules and guidelines from what we experience, so that we get better and better at responding and planning as time goes on. waiting till after an open meeting to express an opinion that might not be received well, is one example of a rule you could adopt in the workplace. Knowing who your allies are among coworkers might be a good guideline for getting ahead in your job and career. The key ingredient in these mental processes is language. When we learn to stop the action and then see the past so we can foresee the future, the only way to learn from the mental imagery is to use words to describe it. Talking to ourselves is central to problem solving. It's essential to planning. It's even critical to understanding the rules of society. Weak verbal working memory, in fact, is why it's not uncommon for adults with ADHD to rack up a criminal record, often of misdemeanors. It's not malevolence that causes the lawbreaking, but a fundamental failure to understand the rules. Unless you talk to yourself about your options, it can be pretty easy to decide, for example, that shoplifting something that's caught your eye is okay, because you can always return it later. Having a grasp of what ADHD does to your executive functions can really help you compensate for deficits. Yes, your mind's voice, verbal working memory, is weaker and less effective than those of people who don't have ADHD. On the other hand, if you practice using it and make it stronger, you can use your improved verbal working memory to compensate for a weak nonverbal working memory, and vice versa. Talk to yourself about the mental images you're able to call up, and you strengthen those visual memories for later use. Enrich your bank of visual memories, and you have more information to analyze logically with your mind's voice. The bottom line? You improve the odds of your making better, more nuanced decisions. Identify your biggest verbal working memory problem areas. Developing verbal working memory skills is a relatively sophisticated achievement. To start practicing, try to come up with a modest goal you haven't been able to reach due to poor verbal working memory. For example, you may really want to manage your own investments, but it might make sense to start with a simple savings plan that requires you to deposit a small amount of cash in a savings account every week first. Even a simple-sounding goal is a lot harder to pursue consistently than you might think before you start. Strategy. Become your own interviewer. Don't just see the mental images in your mind. Discuss them with yourself. Label them. Describe just what you are seeing in your mind's eye. Do you have trouble reading other people's emotions? With particular people and in particular situations, or all the time? Do you find it very difficult to understand and follow rules? Where and when? Do you have trouble understanding and retaining what you've read? Do you decide to begin a diet, a savings plan, or another program, and then drop it almost immediately? Then extract some rule or principle from this review that tells you what you want to do the next time you face this situation. Literally picture yourself holding a microphone and interviewing yourself on TV. Verbally describe the situation you're in. Ask yourself relevant questions. Be as tough on yourself as the most dogged journalist. Ask yourself questions like these. What's going on here? Have I been in a situation like this before? What's the same and what's different? What did I do last time? Is that an option here? Are there better choices? If I decide to do X, what will happen? Have I seen X, a successful person you admire, do this? If not, what has X done in similar situations? If my decision turns out badly, how will I feel tomorrow? Strategy. Narrate what's happening out loud. As you know, kids narrate their own play all the time. As adults, we're supposed to have learned how to make this commentary private and internal. Unfortunately, ADHD has other ideas. So let's go back to what worked so well when we were kids. Go ahead and describe what's happening to you and all the rich, vivid language you can come up with out loud. You don't have to make it loud, just out loud. Externally vocalized words are more powerful at controlling and guiding our behavior than words we may say in our mind. You might feel most comfortable doing this when you're alone. You certainly won't want to do it where you could disturb someone. But it's possible to choose situations where you can practice this without fear of someone else's reaction. When you're working on a project at home and trying to decide whether to keep at it or abandon it for something more fun. When you're trying to stick to the rules of the road while behind the wheel or you're alone in the car. On a jog or walk through the woods when you're planning what you're going to do with the rest of your day. Just take the solitude as an opportunity to get used to verbalizing where you are, what you're doing, what you could do next, and what might happen. While you're at a task, give yourself instructions about keeping at it, doing it carefully, completing each step, and finishing the project. You'll find you're much more likely to see the task through to the end than if you just thought about these ideas in your head. Your mind's eye and mind's voice aren't as strong as those of other people. You can give them a boost by following rules 1 through 3. But there's even more you can do to help yourself. Listen to rule 4. 19. Rule 4. Externalize key information. Are you forgetful and scattered? Do people treat you as if you're unreliable and untrustworthy? Are you beginning to agree that you have no self-discipline or stick-to-itiveness? If you have adult ADHD, you probably answered yes to all of these questions. Rule 4 is most definitely for you. Even with ADHD robbing you of some of the power of your executive functions, you can build them to their greatest potential. That's why it makes such sense to follow rules 1 through 3. The more you practice the strategies in the last 3 chapters, the more you build those skills, despite an innate deficit. That doesn't mean you have to stop there, however. You deserve all the help you can get in leveling that playing field. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to avail yourself of the many ways you can boost your internal memory with external cues. Kids with ADHD get this kind of help in school, when the teacher provides periodic reminders to stay on task. Parents set up star charts to motivate children to keep up the efforts they're making with chores or homework. Parents also often use picture charts that graphically break down the steps and routines like getting dressed for school, so that a child who gets lost or distracted in the middle of the process has something to consult to stay on track. Can you think of any reason why you shouldn't get the same kind of assistance? The difference for you, of course, is that you're generally on your own here. You might be able to enlist the aid of a spouse or a roommate to some extent. But for the most part, it's up to you to create and use external reminders. The good news is that it can be fun. You get to use the abundant creativity bestowed on many people, including those with ADHD. Where do you still have a lot of trouble, no matter how much mental effort you invest? It doesn't really matter whether your difficulty is with stopping the action, seeing the past, or saying the past. The strategies for externalizing information can be applied to any type of reminder you need. You can, and should, use external cues all the time. Many of the tools that are perfect for issuing reminders are imminently portable and adaptable, meaning there's no limit to how and where you can take advantage of them. Still, it will help to know which areas seem to be particularly memory-resistant for you, so you can be sure to tackle them and spare yourself the frustration of ongoing shortfalls. Do you still have lots of trouble staying silent when it would be better to do so? When and where? Do you forget to gather tools or materials for the tasks you need to do, at work or elsewhere? Does your mental to-do list always include items that get carried over from day to day, never getting checked off? Which kinds of tasks? Do you feel like you're often at the mercy of your emotions? Which emotions are a particular problem for you? Anger, frustration, guilt, shame, etc. Do you have less control in some situations or with certain people than others? These are just a few problems that can be solved with the help of externalized information. Think of the blunders or failures you regret the most. That's where you can immediately apply one of the following strategies. Strategy: put physical cues in plain view in problem situations. These cues can take many forms. Here are some examples keyed to particular problem situations. A sign you stand on top of your computer monitor, reminding you not to start surfing the net instead of doing your work. Or try a picture of your boss, on which you have printed, "Get to work." A note to yourself that you keep in the same pocket as your wallet, so that when you reach in to pull out the wallet and buy something, you get the note too, and it asks you whether you really need to make that purchase. A card you tack up near all the phones in the house that asks whether that call you're about to make can wait till later, after you've finished whatever task you're in the middle of. A photo of a tennis trophy or any prize you want to earn to keep you practicing. A symbol, like a stop sign, that you can put anywhere to remind you to stop the action before making any decision. A list of rules for writing a complicated report that you have to generate every 2 weeks at work. Physical cues are your stand-in for a shaky working memory. Something external, in front of us, is a far more potent reminder than an image or word held in our mind. Next time you enter the situation for which you've created a cue, your cue will catch your attention and remind you of what you intended to do in that situation. For example, do you impulsively eat too much and want to lose weight? Put a picture of the latest hot athlete or film star or your own younger, slimmer self on your refrigerator. You could also post a stop sign on the refrigerator door that says, "Step away from the refrigerator," perhaps accompanied by a picture of a police officer you found in a newspaper or magazine and clipped out to tape alongside your stop sign. Strategy: make a list of steps or procedures you want to follow the next time you encounter a problem task. To-do lists are used by everyone, ADHD or no ADHD, because they work so well. If you end your day dejected because too many of the goals you set for the day fall by the wayside, a to-do list can be a godsend. If you put it where you can't miss it, it will remind you of what you need to be doing right now or next, when you drift away towards something more fun, or just something that entered your field of vision and was hard to ignore. There is nothing like the feeling of checking off that last chore or task at the end of the day. Now you can have some fun. I tried to use to-do lists, but I guess I just got as carried away writing the list as I do with the other things I get immersed in. I didn't know when to stop, and had a 3-page list of things to do in a single day. I just couldn't seem to see when I wrote it that I was being insanely unrealistic about how much I could get done in a day. How can I rein myself in and write a reasonable to-do list? One idea, if you have a sympathetic spouse, a mentor at work, a sibling or roommate who is willing to pitch in occasionally, is to ask someone else to review your list. Remember, one of your biggest stumbling blocks is a poor sense of time. This can make it really tough to figure out how long each item on your list should take, to say nothing of how to budget your time while you're working on that list. Many adults who don't have ADHD have a pretty good idea of how long standard household tasks usually take. A mentor or boss at work will know how long work jobs take, and you can start to develop a sense of how much longer than the average person you might need to do particular tasks, depending on your skills in that area, how interesting you find the task, what the distractions usually are, and what your attention span is usually like. Which brings me to a second idea for reining in an out-of-control to-do list. Use a journal. If you keep track of how long you took to do certain tasks, you'll begin to know yourself and your habits well enough to budget your time more accurately. Listen to the following strategy. Strategy: carry a journal with you all the time. A journal can help you record the specifics of certain tasks and what it takes you to get them done, as just noted. But more generally, it can serve as your record of what you need to do. One of the greatest difficulties you're likely to have with working memory is remembering what others have told you that's important. How often have you disappointed yourself or someone else by forgetting a date, a commitment, a promise, an appointment, a deadline? Whether at work, in social relationships, or at home with your family, the ability to remember what you've said you'd do is crucial to your integrity and your image in the eyes of others. This is especially so for promises you make to others. As I'm sure you know, for you it's more routine to forget this sort of information than to remember it. I'm sure you also know how dearly you pay for these lapses, at work, at home, and elsewhere. The adults with ADHD that I know report that being viewed as more forgetful and less reliable than other adults, being unable to keep and fulfill promises and commitments the way adults are expected to do, and generally being thought of as less trustworthy, causes them more shame and distress than just about any other shortcoming that ADHD has handed them. You don't have to resign yourself to that fate. Start carrying a journal with you, as already noted in Chapter 10. This can be a small blank notebook, a bound journal, or anything else you can write in. The point is, you have to take this with you all the time wherever you go, just as you put your wallet in your back pocket or purse, and your cell phone in your pocket or on a belt clip. You should have a small paper journal on you at all times. Today, before you have a chance to forget, start using your journal. Write in it anything someone says to you that you are to do, any promise you make, any commitment to others, date, deadline, meeting, or other time-sensitive instructions. Anything and everything that may be important for you to remember. Don't consider yourself completely dressed in the morning until you slip that journal, with pencil, into your pocket or purse. Use whatever tool is best for you as a journal, including the devices listed in Chapter 10. Don't just write in your journal. Refer to it often, hourly if need be, to keep yourself on target in honoring your agreements, completing assigned work, fulfilling promises to others, and meeting those deadlines. Digital recording devices seem ever-present and may seem like an obvious choice for your journal, but I've found that people are likely to use and remember to read a small pocket journal, whereas they often misplace their little digital recorder or just forget to replay it to hear what they said earlier. If you are an adult with ADHD, this journal should be with you at all times, unless a situation calls for you to be naked. Even then, it should be right nearby, within easy reach, if you have to remember anything during this situation. As I said, adults with ADHD report that it's awfully depressing to be viewed as unreliable. It doesn't take long to agree with others' assessment and view yourself as devoid of persistence, self-discipline, and willpower. To help address your executive function deficit, follow the next few rules. 20. Rule 5. Feel the future. If the purpose of the tasks you need to complete feels flat and abstract to you, leaving you uninspired to keep at them, Rule 5 is for you. One major consequence of what I call the time blindness of ADHD is difficulty conjuring up the past so you can apply what you recall to the future. That's why Rules 2 and 3 are so important. They help you learn from your memories, so you become more adept at handling similar situations up ahead. But ADHD also leaves you with large gaps between the present and the future. If no one is dangling a carrot right in front of your face, you may need lots of convincing to keep moving toward your destination. Sometimes the self-talk you learned in Rule 3 will keep you going, telling yourself that you need to get this job done, telling yourself how to do it, reminding yourself of the steps you need to take along the way, and nudging yourself to pay attention to the time can work in many situations. Another method that might keep you at a task is to warn yourself about what will happen if you don't do what you're supposed to do. This form of saying the past might involve reminding yourself that you had to pay a lot more for your son's textbook when you weren't able to buy it early, because you had spent the money elsewhere. It might mean listing the jobs you've lost, because you didn't meet assigned deadlines. It could be telling yourself that your husband didn't speak to you for a week after you made an excuse to leave his father's birthday party early, because you were bored. Unfortunately, for adults and kids with ADHD, the threat of negative consequences isn't the most potent incentive. And even if it were, not everything comes with an obvious, direct, or dire consequence for non-performance. For many adult goals, you're just supposed to do what you have to do, because it has to get done. And getting it done is the right thing to do. Here's where flat and abstract come in. A lot of adults in the general population find this intrinsic motivator pretty unmotivating, too. Many people who don't have ADHD turn to the same types of incentives described in this book, at least for some tasks they really don't want to do. With ADHD thrown into the mix, however, those incentives become essential. Here's why. ADHD can make it tough for you to grasp the moral imperative behind getting a task done for its own sake, so that's not likely to move you. ADHD can turn uninteresting into agonizingly boring, making you feel like you're going to explode with restlessness if you can't get away from a task that's no fun. ADHD can make it impossible to see that what you do may not have just one bad consequence, but two or three, each of which can lead to its own six undesired outcomes, and that each of those can produce 12 others, and so forth. And a poor sense of time can prevent you from grasping that all these consequences can unfold much faster than you'd imagine before you have a chance to jump in and stop the avalanche. Figure out where you are least motivated to get things done. In which area do you find it hardest to stay motivated? School? Work? Household chores? Community activities? Relationships? Which ones? What items grow old on your to-do list because you don't feel motivated to finish them? ADHD makes it hard to stay motivated to complete tasks for all the reasons listed before. But there's another reason that various responsibilities seem so uncompelling, so flat and abstract in purpose. There is no emotion attached to getting them done. Emotion is an extremely powerful motivator. In fact, our emotions are the very source of our self-motivation. Scientists studying human emotions have concluded that a major function of emotion is to cause or motivate us to act. Although emotions are complex, certain emotions generally lead to certain types of actions. Here are just a few examples. Fear leads to fight or flight, attacking the source of danger or running away. Anger leads us to right a wrong. Joy and pleasure lead to the urge to keep doing what we're doing. Shame dissuades us from repeating the shameful act. Even our self-talk often relies more on emotion than we realize. Consider again how we warn ourselves of the negative consequences of not finishing a task. It's not just the practical aspects of those consequences that we find undesirable. Sure, having to spend more money than necessary on a textbook hurts your bank account. Losing jobs hurts your bank account, too. And receiving the silent treatment from your spouse disrupts your daily routine. But what may really move us to heed the warnings we give ourselves is our memory of how we felt about these consequences. Leaving your son without a textbook he needs until you can come up with the cash might make you feel shame. Being fired repeatedly is pretty devastating to your self-esteem. And being shunned by the person you love most hurts and might make you angry, too. For some people, the memory of these uncomfortable feelings is enough to motivate them to do what they need to do to avoid a repeat performance. That's why you need to use your visual imaging of these past events and their emotions to help you trigger the motivation you may need to get things done. But as noted earlier, recalling or anticipating negative consequences of not doing something is not as powerful a motivator for most people as focusing on the potential positive consequences of getting it done. Focusing on the negative can even get you down, compared to the uplifting, rejuvenating, and inspiring feelings you can get by imagining how great it will feel to get to your goal. Strategy. Ask yourself point blank, what will it feel like when I get this done? Making a conscious effort to really feel what it will be like when you finish the task at hand or reach your goal is your next step after seeing and saying the past to foresee the future. Ask yourself, what will it feel like when I get this done? And then focus on that emotional sensation. What could it be? Pride? Self-satisfaction? The happiness you anticipate from completing that project? The sense of accomplishment you may experience? The pleasure or happiness of others with whom you have shared this goal, or for whom you were doing this job? Whatever that emotion is, work hard to feel it, right then, right there, as you contemplate your goals. Then, throughout your work or as you pursue this goal or project, keep doing this. Repeatedly, every day, or every time you are in that situation, working toward that goal or destination. Ramp up your efforts to really feel what it will be like when you get there. All future-directed behavior needs a motive, and all motives, motivations, are the consequence of our emotions. Your imagined emotions, brought forth with a lot of conscious effort, can be the fuel that drives your activities, boosting you toward your destination like a cruise missile. People without ADHD also propel themselves forward by imagining what reaching a desired destination will feel like. The difference is that they can usually do it without thinking, because their sense of time and their visual working memory are strong enough to allow such foresight easily. For you, however, this has to be a very conscious, deliberate effort. Give this technique a boost by cutting out pictures of the rewards you hope to earn from what you are doing, and placing these around you while you're working. They'll enhance the potency of your own imagery, and therefore make the emotions you're anticipating even more vivid. So work on visualizing, verbalizing, and then feeling not just the goal and the steps you need to achieve it, but also what you will feel when it finally gets done. Every time you sit down to continue working on a project, task, or goal, one of the things you must do is to feel that future outcome. In Chapter 9, I suggested that calling up mental images of past accomplishments can relieve stress and anxiety when you're under the gun, leaving you feeling both calm and motivated. If you have trouble imagining how you'll feel when you get a job done, start by recalling a similar task that you did get done. This is a perfect example of how each method you use to thwart an executive function deficit caused by ADHD boosts your ability to use another compensating strategy. So this is another reason to practice following Rule 2. The more mental images of past successes you've collected, the easier it will be to imagine the positive feelings you'll have when you complete the task before you right now. A good reason to practice Rule 5 is that it will fill up your inner emotional well. The same time blindness that keeps you from having as large a mental store of visual or verbal memories as those without ADHD also causes you to have fewer palpable, vibrant, potent, or motivating emotional memories. It's not that you don't feel the emotions that others feel. It's just that you may not have your experiences with them slotted away in your mind to the same extent. Or they may not be as easily retrievable as they are for people who aren't dealing with ADHD. This strategy, like those under the other rules in Step 4, make it easier for you to accomplish what you want right now, in this moment. But the more you practice it, the more memories and skills you build, making it increasingly easy in the future. So, begin with the end in mind, as Stephen Covey says in his best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Visualizing the goal and feeling that sense of accomplishment, relief, pride, and success you will have not to mention seeing the rewards you may earn, can help to fill up that motivational fuel tank.